Before the show starts, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsor. We've partnered with CoinBeast Media to bring you guys top quality educational Bitcoin content. They have Bitcoiners who are experts in certain areas of Bitcoin called pros who will be presenting on our show over the course of the next couple months. So make sure you guys tune in every single Wednesday to make sure you don't miss them. You can also connect with their pros one-on-one to get a personalized lesson in a certain area of Bitcoin to help walk you through any and all of your questions. They also have wonderfully written articles on their website that are jam-packed full of information, so make sure to check out their website at coinbeast.com. Their vision is very in line with ours, so we're beyond excited to be collaborating with them to bring all of you guys good quality Bitcoin content. So without further ado, let's get into the show.
All right, class. Welcome back. This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth. And like always, we are at block height 676,169. And the current price is $52,481 per Bitcoin. Nick, you want to introduce our guest tonight or our teacher tonight?
Yeah, so our teacher tonight is Nabismo Prime. We're going to have his Twitter link down in the description below, so go give him a follow. He's an awesome dude. He's going to be presenting using Bitcoin privately. He did a dry run with us last week going over this presentation, and it was fire. Very well done. And then he worked on it even more over the week. So I'm very excited for this. This is a good quality piece of educational content that I'm proud to have up on our channel. So without further ado, Nabismo, thank you for coming on, man. Really glad to have you here.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Very excited to be here and giving this presentation. And as Optimus had asked me to kind of go through a little bit about my background and what qualifies me to be giving this presentation. I am a computer science student, specifically in the discipline of network security. And I am very close to receiving a certified ethical hacker certification through an industry recognized certificate authority as well. This is all new for me. I'm going through a career change in my 30s, and I just landed my first IT job and actually start next week. So this is all happening very fast, and I'm finally getting a chance to put the stuff I've been learning to use in the real world. And it's a very exciting time. And so I wanted to take the time to put together some of the knowledge that I've gathered over the past couple of years, learning about the different vulnerabilities that exists just with any sort of electronic communication in regards to a network, not just Bitcoin. They both go hand in hand, but this presentation will kind of just be a high level overview on security best practices in general. And I really hope it inspires people to fall further down the rabbit hole and investigate this stuff on your own. There will be sources for where I got all this information at the end of the presentation. They're all links, and I encourage you all to look and explore this stuff deeper, because I'm only going to brush past some of these topics just in the interest of time. And like they said, we can discuss the stuff at the end as well if you guys have questions. So without further ado, the most logical place to start in designing any sort of Bitcoin security plan is threat modeling. Have a very clear understanding of who it is that you are trying to distance yourself from and what their capabilities are to be able to develop effective countermeasures. If you're defending against the IRS, that's going to be a lot different than defending against some script kiddie that maybe carries your golf clubs in the summer. But privacy is privacy, and we're going to go through some ways that you can hopefully insulate yourself from just any sort of threats in general, regardless of who the actor is. But we'll also go through certain techniques that certain sources would use to enumerate and find more information about you and potentially, you know, bring legal action against you if it's the government or somebody steal your funds and take your keys. The goal of this presentation is to get people interested in their security so that hopefully everybody here keeps their sats safe for the rest of their life and for generations to come. Security is kind of best thought of on a scale. There is no way to be completely secure in Bitcoin or in anything, really. Where there's a will, there's a way. That's why it's so important to have a clear understanding of who's after you, how motivated they are, and what's at their disposal. The more ammunition you give any sort of adversary, you're just, let me back up. The more ammunition you give an adversary, the easier you're making it for them to just continue pulling on that thread and learning more and more information and getting closer to your target, or the target, which is you. And lastly, the most credible threat is often yourself. Bitcoin is an asset that demands extreme ownership, both in keeping it safe and using it. You can just as easily dox yourself or reveal a bunch of information you didn't mean to just by spending Bitcoin or talking about it somewhere in some unsecure communication channel. The info that's leaked, as we all know, the blockchain is public. It's pseudonymous. There are addresses and transactions that you can read on the blockchain, and anybody that has a Block Explorer can read that. But it doesn't necessarily link right back to your identity. It's often a combination of metadata. And for those of you that don't know what metadata is, it's just data about other data that can be used to gain a better understanding of just who you are as a person, how much Bitcoin you might hold, how you might be securing it, and where and when you might be spending it. One of a hacker's best friend is HTTP traffic. Once I have your IP address, I can start to port scan and do a whole bunch of other things to enumerate and gather information about my target. This picture right here is a screenshot from, this isn't actually me using it at the time. This is somebody with a Mac, but this is a program that I use to intercept packets. And before I forward them onto their host, I can manipulate those packets to my liking, take information from them and not deliver it to the actual host. And I can pretty much just find out everything I need to know from watching your HTTP traffic. And that's why it's so important to distance yourself from all the information that exchanges have, because those are going to be attached to those UTXOs that leave the exchange. And then if you go on to spend from there, you're just leaving a trail of breadcrumbs right back to your real identity. Going back to kind of how the data's leak, exchanges are a big one. This is, you're not only trusting them with your data to keep safe from governments. Well, they're not really keeping it safe from governments. They're cooperating with governments and sharing that data, but you're also trusting them to safeguard that and not get hacked. I know Binance got hacked in, I think, 2018, and there were thousands and thousands of pictures of people holding up their passports with all their information on it that were leaked onto the dark web. And it was just an absolute nightmare. And it was a hacker's field day. I routinely monitor some dark web communication channels, and there was a lot of these identities being shared around, and people were getting absolutely wrecked by keeping stuff on exchanges and not using two-factor authentication. It's very easy to SIM swap these targets as well. Another point of failure stemming from the exchange would be trade receipts. Your email is only as secure as you make it. and as secure as your email provider. I would strongly advise against using services like Google. We'll get into some more appropriate email clients or more privacy-focused email clients later in the presentation, but sitting in your email inbox right now is probably a wealth of information for a hacker. If somebody gets into that and it's unencrypted, you can just go nuts. There is all sorts of information that people keep in their emails. And I've seen firsthand evidence of, you know, people coming to me saying, hey, look, I cracked this person's emails, and showing me all this stuff that this person just had, this innocent person had in their email. And it's important to kind of delete that stuff when you can, but be proactive about it in using an email client that isn't going to leave you in that position in the first place, so that you have end-to-end encrypted traffic or emails. Web plugins are another very very easy way to leak information and potentially increase your threat vector. That might not be the right word I'm using. What I'm trying to say is you're giving out more information to another party that doesn't necessarily need it, and potentially inviting yourself to vulnerabilities stemming from malicious updates and other data that can be passed to that plugin and potentially subvert some other part of your system. Block explorers are also an incredibly easy way for somebody that could be watching your web traffic, like your ISP or the government. In general, if you're searching for specific transactions and specific blocks, they'll know that you're doing that. It's very easy to see that, especially if you're refreshing it often. And if you're already using transactions that, you know, might be linked to your identity or might somewhat easily be linked to your identity, this is only going to make it that much easier. ISP data harvesting is also becoming increasingly prevalent, not just for terrorism purposes, but for commercial purposes as well. I believe in 2019, they passed a law allowing internet service providers to basically just sell off a lot of data about you. And they're monetizing that, they're making money off of that, but that's also another potential you're inviting chaos into your life, or potentially inviting chaos into your life, the more information that you are letting leak out about you. Chain surveillance companies. Chainalysis is the devil. Don't care for them at all. They're pretty tight-lipped about their techniques and exactly what the capabilities of their software are. There is a great live Q&A that's going on this weekend that I will post in the general chat that is with somebody that supposedly works for one of these companies, or at least has working knowledge of it. And it's a live Q&A of a block spy, and you can ask them questions about, you know, how you're potentially doxing yourself or any other security related questions you might have in regards to chain surveillance, because that is definitely an area of opportunity for me. As I said, you know, my experience is largely in just info security in general, not pertaining specifically to Bitcoin, but Bitcoin does use the same TCP/IP protocol and hypertext transfer protocol that the regular internet uses. So it's vulnerable on that front. Online shopping with unmixed UTXOs. This goes back to your identity being linked to the exchange. You're shopping with that, even if you've hopped through multiple wallets since then, it's still entirely feasible that, you know, you are the one spending those transactions, and it could potentially link other transactions to other addresses that maybe you didn't want, or you don't want anyone knowing anything about you, but it could reveal much more transactional data than just that specific transaction. SIM swapping is becoming incredibly prevalent, and it is very unsophisticated actors doing this. Much to my chagrin, I know people that do this in real life, and both of them are in their early 20s, somewhat gainfully employed, and just have a complete lack of a moral compass, I guess. Since I found out they've been doing this, I've distanced myself from them, but they are getting away with it, and they are not really that smart, and that should terrify you, because they are buying crack databases on the dark web, and they're going through all these accounts, and they're finding their ways into people's emails and their phone numbers. And T-Mobile is easily the easiest company to SIM swap with. They're, you know, corrupting these T-Mobile employees into getting them to, you know, bypass whatever security measures they might have in place at the actual store to physically migrate your data to a new device. And they're successfully doing it. And these people have two-factor authentication via text, and they're keeping coin. It's not always Bitcoin. Sometimes it's other cryptocurrencies on exchanges. And when they have, you know, any account changes, just have to go to a text message and somebody else has your phone, it's not easy to completely drain their account. And unfortunately, this is happening a lot more often, like I said, and it's very unsophisticated actors. These are happening not just in dark web forums either. This is like plain Discord servers and Telegram groups. I could show you like 25 different groups right now where there are just people talking out in the open, trading these cracked databases and all sorts of other sketchy information. So an action item, how to kind of correct and defend against all of these potential vulnerabilities. One of the biggest ones is running your own node. This is the most private way to receive Bitcoin, and it ultimately makes you the most sovereign. You don't want to be depending on some other wallet software's node and trusting them with your transaction data, you know, having them being able to know potentially what addresses are yours, where you're spending, and if they are cooperating with governments or have other ulterior motives as well. You just don't want to trust them with that, and you don't have to. Bitcoin's made for enemies. You should not trust. You should always verify. And that goes with what I'm saying as well. You should just use this as a starting point and then continue to do more research on your own until you find a security setup that is within your risk appetite and is adequately meeting. Once you're running your own node, it's in your best interest to CoinJoin, and we'll go more in depth about that in a couple of slides. Limiting number of web plugins and permissions we already kind of talked about, and using privacy-focused email clients with strong passwords and two-factor authentication. And when I mean two-factor authentication, I don't just mean two-factor authentication via SMS. It's in your best interest to use a authenticator app, and I have one that I've recommended in a slide later in the presentation. And what that does is basically the attacker would need your physical phone in hand as opposed to just having your text messages sent to another device, or text messages that were meant for you and your number sent to another device, and using a VPN to provide a greater degree of privacy. Continuing, never merging post-mix UTXOs. We'll go, once we discuss CoinJoins a little bit more, we will discuss best practices after you've CoinJoined, because there are a number of things that you can do after a CoinJoin that can completely undo the privacy that you just did in your CoinJoin. And a perfect example of this is the most recent Twitter hacker kid from the summer. It's like a 17-year-old kid from Florida that did that whole, like, send me one Bitcoin, I'll send you two back, that thing. He took his ill-gotten gains, threw it in Wasabi, threw the whole amount in. I don't know you know, if he was running a node or what the specifics were on his end. Sent it all in and then merged all the inputs right after the coin join right into, I'm not sure if it was a single wallet, but it was very easily traced. What I'm getting at is he merged UTXOs and completely undid the privacy that was done by the coin join, and it made it very easy for the FBI to follow him. When you're downloading the software, it's important that you want to verify that software. Sometimes that's going to be via checksums, which are putting the file through a hashing algorithm like SHA-256 or something, so that you get a deterministic output. It's going to be the same every time you put that same file through there to make sure that there are no corruptions or anything is altered in the file. Another method of verifying software is using PGP developer signatures. Oftentimes through downloading from like Electrum or Samurai or some other Bitcoin company, oftentimes they'll have a PGP developer signature that you can verify the authenticity of the files and make sure that they were not corrupted or tampered with in any way between downloading and firing up locally on your machine. Using alternative delivery addresses for online shopping can be, particularly when you're making Bitcoin related transactions, and that's whether paying for Bitcoin, paying in Bitcoin, or paying for Bitcoin related items, especially Ledger. I think one of the most newsworthy things recently in regards to hardware wallets was the Ledger hack. Their database was hacked, and I had just got my parents started on a Ledger too, right around when this happened. So I was feeling pretty bad about that. But it was basically one of these database hacks that I'm talking about that ended up on the dark web of all these basically customer profiles. It sounds like a CRM, a customer resource manager, was hacked or something, and it just dumped this database with all this information about people that have ordered Ledger devices to their home address. And it didn't matter if they paid with a private, you know, if they paid with coin joined UTXOs or not, they had it shipped to their house and it's in their records. So now that you've trusted Ledger to safeguard this data and they've proved not able to rise to the challenge in that regard, all those people that had their information in that database got it, their info leaked, and it's floating all around the dark web, and they're opening themselves up to $5 wrench attacks. And I think that that is arguably the most pressing threat that any Bitcoiner faces. Criminals typically go for low-hanging fruit. There's no need to overcomplicate things. If somebody sees that, you know, you're doing really well and you're flaunting it and you're obviously don't have your head on a swivel, somebody's going to come eat lunch. And it's only a matter of time before that happens. And this is just kind of this better online privacy and digital habits are going to make it harder for you to attract that kind of attention in your life. If you can, you know, keep people away from where you live, you'll probably, and, you know, follow best practices for using Bitcoin, there's a pretty good chance you'll be able to keep it safe, aside from somebody kidnapping you and beating the private keys out of you. Sorry, to follow up on that, using an office address can sometimes be helpful as well, or a PO box, even though sometimes you have to do that, you have to provide ID for that, but I know people that have opened up PO boxes with questionable, at best, fake IDs. I'm not advocating that you do this, but it's possible, and it's not that hard. Using end-to-end whenever possible is also going to help minimize that attack vector. Anything you're talking about or any information you could potentially be giving out, even if it's not in relation to Bitcoin, somebody could just be watching your internet traffic or your text messages and be learning things about you from that, that could potentially lead them to, you know, getting into your accounts or just any information you give an attacker is just like a thread. They just keep pulling on and pulling on and pulling on. It leads to more information, and sooner or later your setup's going to unravel. And possibly one of the most important things for using Bitcoin privately as far as transacting is Lightning Network. And I didn't get too much into this on purpose in this presentation because I feel like this could be its entirely own presentation. I wanted to kind of focus more on the vulnerabilities that exist within just using the internet in general, using Bitcoin on the internet in general. And we can get more into that at another time. So coin joins. Coin joins, for those of you that don't know, are a great privacy tool for Bitcoiners. They're non-custodial collaborative spend transactions. So basically, and I'm going to speak about Whirlpool mostly because that is personally what I use and what I'm most comfortable with, but I have used all these at one point or another. I do have Wasabi, but I've never actually entered a coin join round with Wasabi because it was prohibitively expensive at the time, and I wasn't really looking to gamble with like $1,000 on just testing out a new software. It's basically a transaction that allows you to combine your UTXOs of equal amount with a number of other users with UTXOs of equal amounts and merge those together in a transaction that's going to create equal outputs. And then it breaks that deterministic link between the UTXO that went in, the UTXO that went out. And there's actually a cool tool on Samurai that lets you play around with the entropy in transactions and kind of, you can move all these things that I'm mousing over around. You can play with all the different paths and like work out different scenarios of like tracing UTXOs. And I'm not sure if it's complete. It looks like it might have a few bugs in it, but I should drop a link to that in the general chat because I would encourage people to start trying to, you know, trace, you know, see what your on-chain footprint is, because you'd probably be surprised how much information is floating around out there just because of stuff you have on the blockchain or that could potentially be aggregated by governments or chain surveillance companies. Like I said, there's three different implementations for coin joins, Whirlpool, Wasabi, and Join Market. Those are the three major ones. I'm sure there are actually other ones that exist maybe that just don't have as much attention, but for the purpose of this presentation, we'll stick to those. Whirlpool is the only one I know of that does exactly equal, like everyone in the coin join has exactly equal rounds, because I think Wasabi does a couple different tiers. They have much larger coin join rounds, and there's been a lot of back and forth lately between the two implementations, particularly on Twitter, and that's part of what I used as a source for the presentation too, because there's actually some really good information in there. But it's about the supply side of these coin joins. The Wasabi is being scrutinized for potentially having Bull Bitcoin as one of their largest liquidity providers for the coin join rounds, opening it up to a possible Sybil attack with all these doxed UTXOs that, you know, are have identities tied to them. If they are the majority of the liquidity in that, it would make it very easy for them to do that, even if it was inadvertent. But somebody else, you know, that might have a chain analysis company or something could begin to degrade the transaction privacy that was built up with these coin joins by all that information being tied to those UTXOs. And Join Market, the third one, is a pretty, it's definitely not a beginner's implementation. I've used it a couple times. I have it on my Raspi Blitz, but I find it kind of, even with the graphical user interface, there's a command line version, which is more powerful, and a graphical user interface. Even with that, I found just the whole setup and user experience to be challenging. And I think I might have lost some sats in it too, or way overpaid for fees. It kind of works more on a market basis, I think. Whereas Whirlpool's just like a central coordinator for these coin joins. And that also is a good point to bring up, the legality of coin joins. A lot of private services, particularly exchanges, I know BlockFi definitely, and a few other places, I know BottlePi flagged one recently, but sent it right back, are flagging coin join transactions. And it's there, I guess it's their right to do so, but it's got a lot of people asking, you know, is coin joining legal, and is there a central entity that can go down with this? And the answer is no, at least with Whirlpool. It's not being run from, or I mean, they are running a server, but they're just a coordinator for the coin joins. It's not like they can be completely shut down by a government, or probably would have happened already. That being said, coin join transactions are important to the fungibility of Bitcoin and making sure that, you know, one Bitcoin does in fact equal one Bitcoin. You're not spending tainted Bitcoin, or people aren't rejecting your funds because it has a certain history associated with it. I think the coin join is fantastic for Bitcoin, and it's not just for people with nefarious intentions or trying to hide stolen Bitcoin or something. It's really privacy, I think, is a natural right. I don't like where things are headed with the government. And as more things are becoming digitized, they're just becoming increasingly more, they're having more and more power over our lives. And, you know, I want to take that back. I want that privacy. I want that serenity. I want to be able to walk into another country with my wealth intact. I don't have to worry about it being stolen by a government, and I don't really want them knowing what I hold, who I'm interacting with, and really just any, I want them to mind their own business. And CoinJoin's a tool that can help afford users privacy. Sorry, to get back to the different implementations, Whirlpool, in my opinion, is the best in all this. They communicate through, you can link it to your own node so that you're not doxing any transaction data or letting them know your addresses and the balances within that. So you can use it privately. And brings me to my next slide, which is, this is kind of a mess too, and I'll get back to post-mix spending with CoinJoin, but this is kind of a flow chart that I made, and some people are going to argue with me on some points on here of kind of the order of operations that you should do things, because there's a lot of information being thrown at you. And I know Twitter can be kind of overwhelming sometimes, especially if a newcomer posts a security related question and they're all of a sudden just bombarded with people telling them they're an idiot because, you know, they don't run a Tor node, or they're not PGP verifying, or I don't know, something like that. And I think it would be most logical to kind of start with a privacy-focused email client so that you can at least protect your communications. From there, move on to a VPN that doesn't use logs. From there, I'd set up your own Tor node so that you have a place to actually eventually receive this Bitcoin to, and to link to a Samurai Dojo so that you can begin putting your UTXOs through a Whirlpool. And it also brings up the possibility of buying KYC or buying non-KYC Bitcoin. Most of us in the US here, or at least I'm in the US, have no shortage of regulated exchanges that are very convenient And you pay for that convenience with a lot of KYC AML data. But it's easy to get Bitcoin in an instant, but you're signing your life away and giving all that information. There are alternatives that exist, like Bisc is my particular favorite. It's a decentralized Bitcoin, peer-to-peer Bitcoin exchange. And there's kind of a learning curve that goes along with it, but I've just fired it up for the first time in a while. Not so long ago, like the other week, and it looks like there's been some significant improvements, at least in my opinion, to user interface. But that option kind of exists if you are willing to pay a premium. I think Bisc usually runs somewhere around like 8 or 9% higher than the spot price of Bitcoin. But if you're really concerned about keeping your identity a secret, it might be worth it to do that and just send it right to cold storage. Some people might want to coin join after, just as an added layer of security. But basically, you always want to, you want to be in possession of your UTXOs, regardless of where you're getting it from. And there are certain steps that need to be taken to distance yourself from those doxed UTXOs, as evidenced right here. There's a couple different options once you have entered coin. Again, this is using with Samurai Wallet in mind and Whirlpool Postmix. You can allow them to continue cycling for greater privacy for not just you, but for your peers and other coin joins. You can spend using a Stonewall spend, which is like a fake coin join transaction, by adding extra unnecessary inputs and outputs, I believe, to your transaction that are yours. And it just kind of adds some entropy to the transaction to make it a little bit harder to trace where you're spending it. Or if need be, you could send each UTXO to cold storage individually, so that you're not producing change from these outputs, toxic change. Or you could do the smart thing and just open Lightning channels so that you are only broadcasting net balance information to the blockchain without exposing transaction level data. This kind of goes back. This was just a excerpt from Twitter I posted about the reality of BitMEX flagging CoinJoin transactions, because they are looking for these. BlockFi recently had something up as well, and it brings up some interesting points about, you know, the future of CoinJoin and merchants' willingness to accept it and the kind of stigma behind CoinJoin, because right now it definitely has a reputation as a lot of times they're erroneously referred to as mixers. They're not really mixers because you have custody of your coins and they're really just core. You're not swapping, I guess, coins with somebody. It's not like you're putting it all in a big bowl and then taking some out. Like, there were some old school mixers back in the day, like the Silk Road days, that did work like that, but those are pretty easy to find and shut down. And that's exactly what happened. But it brings up interesting discussion about the legality of it and what its place in our future will be. If Congress is willing to, you know, lobby for the government trying to stay out of that, or if exchanges are willing to accept that coin joining is not a inherently criminal activity, nor is it indicative of criminal activity, and that it should be allowed on their platforms. But I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I can't really get into the legality of the whole thing, but I thought it was at least worth mentioning that, you know, there is some risk associated to putting your UTXOs through coin joins, because you will be able to trace it. It's very noticeable on the blockchain that it's part of it, a coin join. And there are some tools in development in order to mitigate this. I don't know too much about it, but I know Samurai has Ricochet, which I believe adds extra hops in between your intended transaction. I'm not really sure how that works, but I think it's definitely looking into, but I think that that was designed with this in mind, just to add some deniability to, you know, possibly the fact that you are the owner of that UTXO. Some suggested privacy tools that I would recommend using: Tutanota, Proton Mail. These are both privacy-focused email clients that are not based in the U.S. They both use end-to-end encryption. Proton Mail is based in Switzerland, Tutanota in Germany, I believe. And they both have a history of not cooperating with authorities as well, because there are, they, I believe, I know Proton Mail, I'm almost positive you can pay in Bitcoin, and Tutanota as well if you're really looking to go private. Messaging, another end-to-end encryption is also important in messaging, and I would strongly suggest using apps like Wickr and Signal as opposed to text messages whenever possible, or even just other web-based messaging clients, because Discord and Telegram, that's not end-to-end encrypted, and Telegram does have a end-to-end encrypted private chat feature, but I've heard rumors it potentially being a honeypot for the Russian government. There's a lot of controversy surrounding the relationship between the person that started Telegram and Vladimir Putin, and he was like exiled, but a lot of people think it was for show. So there's some people that are just not really too trusting in Telegram, and rightfully so. You shouldn't trust any of these platforms that you're communicating through. They're just tools to help you in your privacy. Nothing's going to make you invisible on the internet. And if you have the US government after you, good luck. Because they're really will just bend the rules to get you. However, it really depends on how bad they want you and how important you are. I don't know if we have any whales in the room, but I mean, I don't know how aggressively they're going to pursue just your average hodler, you know, the people in this room, but who knows what the next couple of years have in store for us. So just be prepared. VPNs, I would recommend Mulvad or Proton VPN. Proton VPN is a command line interface and can be a little bit more difficult, but they do have a free version and it seems to work okay. As far as operating systems, if you're looking to get really privacy focused, you can use something called Tails, which stands for the Amnesic Incognito Live System, which is basically a Linux-based operating system contained to a USB drive. And it forces all of its internet connections through Tor, ingoing and outgoing, as well as by default, erases all data stored within RAM at the time. So there's no persistent storage in Tails unless you can enable persistent storage so that when you shut down the computer, you know, things are saved or certain things are saved. It's done in an encrypted way. But if you don't enable persistent storage, every time you boot up Tails, you're booting up a fresh new system as if it was the first time you booted it up. And it's also worthwhile to use Tor browser. Not every regular website is reachable with a Tor browser. I believe you can access ClearNet sites through a Tor browser, but you're not on the Tor network. You're still, you know, using a regular IPv4 address, and that's pretty easy to trace. Graphene OS, there's plenty of guides that exist on Twitter. I think Matt O'Dell did a... This is a clone of Google, and it's used for Android phones. I actually haven't done it myself. I forgot to mention this earlier. I do keep separate devices for my Bitcoin transactions and things related to that. It's not a bad idea to have a burner phone. I have a couple phones, and I keep the conversations separate on each phone to kind of minimize my attack vector for certain things. So this is, Graphene OS is free. You can use a lot of the apps that you would be able to use regularly on Android too, but it's great for if you are looking to use, you know, Bitcoin related apps on a more secure, then something that has Google recording pretty much everything you do, and Apple's no better either. This is another one that you probably haven't heard of too much, EXIF Purge. So EXIF data is exchangeable image file format. And this is metadata that is often attached to pictures, most often from mobile devices. And there's a lot of metadata that can be attached to that up to your device type, your carrier, the coordinates. It can geotag you where you took the location, the time and date it was taken. And a lot of people don't realize that that's attached to the photos that they're sharing. I used to be a Bitcoin vendor on Paxful, which is like a peer-to-peer Bitcoin exchange. And I would KYC people because we were using Zelle and I used to get chargebacks. And I would use EXIF data to scan the ID pictures that people were giving me and get as much data as I could from that. And a lot of times I would find that, you know, it was a picture from the Binance hack or something, that this picture was actually taken 6 months ago or was taken in another country or with some foreign cell phone provider, but it says they're in the US and I'm just, you know, canceled the deal. This doesn't work. This is actually a tool to strip that data before you go to post that to places online. Normally you'd have to send them the actual photo, send the person the actual photo for them to be able to harvest the EXIF data from it. But when you're uploading to these sites, you're uploading it with that data attached to it. So you're trusting the site with that, and that could potentially be used to come back and bite you in the ass. And last but not least, the two-factor authentication app I was talking about, Authy. This is a app that creates new login tokens every 30 or 60 seconds or something, and it's physically tied to your device in your hand so that if you don't have that device in your hand, you're not getting the code that needs to be entered on the website or whatever service you're trying to get into. And that was pretty much it for my presentation. I realize I kind of get a little excited and ramble a little bit. I try to keep it as coherent as possible. And I hope that you guys have plenty of questions that I can reasonably answer those, or at least point you in the right direction in the teacher's lounge tonight. So that being said, this is my Twitter, my GitHub. If you're looking to ever collaborate on some software projects, I like to work in Python. I'm not a programmer per se, but I do use Python for work a lot, and I do some scripting with Bitcoin related things, and particularly Linux servers. I've written a number of scripts with that, but that's not really as Bitcoin related. But if you're looking to connect and write some code together, let's collab. And last but not least, my website. This is a website for pre-coiners, where it's just my way of giving back to the Bitcoin community. So many people have helped me along the way, and everything I've learned has been the result of somebody just taking me under their wing and teaching me. And there weren't, when I got into Bitcoin, there weren't as many sources or this amazing amount of educational content. And even though there is a ton of it today, not all of it's presented in a way that I think that the layman can understand. So the goal of my website is kind of to define Bitcoin in layman's terms and really getting people off zero. These are some of the questions I've encountered most with people new to Bitcoin, and I just got kind of sick of answering them all. So website about it, and I'm constantly adding to it, and it's just a tool to help people learn about Bitcoin. And if anyone's ever looking to add or help make it better and make it a more useful tool, I am all about it. So thank you guys.
Awesome, Nabismo. That was a jam-packed presentation. I know everyone learned a lot of things on this one. We got a few questions in the Discord chat. I don't know if they don't want to ask it, but I'll read off some of the questions that we have. One of them was, do you know or like what Kali Linux is?
Yes. I use Kali Linux often. It is a flavor of Linux specifically for penetration testers, which is not really what I work in right now. I work in more of the networking side of, I'm not actively, I'm defending or helping to defend against networks, but I'm not actively penetrating them. So it's a tool that has a number of really cool tools that you can use to make phishing websites, spin up servers to do man in the middle attacks, and packet crafters to intercept packets and manipulate the data within them, and all sorts of cool stuff. Yep, password sniffers. There are some cool social media tools that you can use to scan and enumerate information about your targets on social media. It's definitely, it's almost entirely command line. So if you don't have, if you're not comfortable, very comfortable using Linux and proficient in Bash, you're probably going to have a hard time using it, but it's definitely worth checking out. And you know, like I said, I do have some videos of me using the actual tools in those, some of those tools in action on like controlled labs, stuff I did for school, and videotape me hacking into this and how I did it and exactly how it works. If I can get that off and remove any traces of my real identity for that, I'd love to share that with you guys and, you know, get people learning about that.
Awesome. Yeah. When you do that with those videos, I could re-update the description and add them in or something like that.
Hell yeah.
We got another question. This one is a little more involved, and he goes, this is by Bitcoin Bing Bong. He goes, as someone who has dabbled with various nodes over the past year or so and not currently using a VPN, the fuck, would it be better to get a VPN than do a setup with a fresh node / wallet implementation?
Would it be better to get? So you're using BISC without a VPN, if I understand correctly.
Or just like any, I think it's like a Bitcoin node. He's running a Bitcoin node, but he's not using a VPN. And so I'm guessing he is under the impression that he's leaked some IP address information. And so would you recommend him probably setting up a fresh node and a fresh wallet under a VPN?
I think the link, if he's using BISC, if it were something else, I'd say maybe. But if he's using BISC, he's leaking the IP address to BISC. I'm not sure what... you know, what kind of logs they keep or what they do with that information. I know it's decentralized. I don't really know too much about how the whole structure works for it, but I would not be too worried about the actual IP address being associated with the outcoming transaction of BISC, because I believe it is kept in a like escrow wallet. Oh, but Ben's right. BISC is all through Tor. So you can't even, I think it would actually hurt your privacy to even introduce another point of failure by using a VPN. You're better off just using BISC through regular Tor.
Awesome. And then we had another question related to BISC. This one is by Viking. Well, it was also kind of... like a non-KYC, getting Bitcoin non-KYC'd. And hold on, I'm trying to find the exact question. But essentially, you did that flowchart of buying Bitcoin via KYC and non-KYC exchanges. And then you like glossed over the coin joining from non-KYC exchanges. And so Viking was wondering what your take is on coin joining non-KYC coins and also coming from BISC. I think he was saying coming from BISC, but also I guess maybe in general.
I think it's always a good idea to do it. It might not be necessary. It might be a waste of sats. It might be overkill. I don't know exactly, you know, how BISC releasing the Bitcoin looks on the blockchain and how that would be used to potentially trace back to you. But I think you're okay without it, because really you're trying to break the link between all the KYC data is what the purpose of CoinJoin is. Wait, what's he saying? Yep, coming from BISC, but also in general, BISC just needed you until recently to add identification to your... Yeah, see, I actually haven't used... Like I said, I spun it up the other day and I was looking around on it, but I actually haven't admittedly bought off BISC in a little while now. I've just been doing the Swan DCA thing, and so I have not added any identification to... Sorry, I'm trying to read what he's typing here. So I guess to be concise as possible, I think it's not necessary, but you could do it if you want to. But it's, you know, of utmost importance that you're running it from your own node so that you're using it in a privacy maximized way if you were going to do that.
Awesome. Well, Nabismo, that was a great presentation. Do you want to show your Twitter and your site for the podcast listeners, because I'm not sure if you said them out loud yet.
Yeah, sure. My Twitter is at Nabismo Prime, and website is getcoined.io.
Well, awesome, Nabismo. You've been one of our oldest students, and now the student has become the teacher. So thanks for coming out, dude. We'll have you back anytime. Nick, do you want to say some last words?
Sure. Yeah, that was a great presentation, dude. It was fucking jam-packed full of information. I'm going to have to go rewatch it again and keep it for later reference.
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say thanks again for coming out, and we'll definitely have to have you on again in the future.
No problem. This whole presentation is available on my website under the Using Bitcoin Privately tab, and you download it, do whatever you like with it. And the links are all clickable within that as well, PDF. So there are sources that I encourage you guys to look into.
Awesome. I'll add that into the description as well. Well, yeah. Thank you, Nabismo. I think we'll do that for this episode. That'll be it. And stick around for Teacher's Lounge.